note, and this is described in great detail by Pierre Coe in the passage I read, as well as subsequent passages, note that some of the people involved in the reversal of Pierre Coe's push for a reorganization of the French Air Force, according to much more modern doctrines, some of them were sincere but inept conservatives, some of them were fascists. And again, the poor performance given by the French military in 1940 was due to a combination of deliberate subversion and sincere, albeit very tragic, ineptitude. I would note also, although we haven't got time to go into it this evening, that among the other fatal mistakes made by the French military was the resistance of the suggestion made by then-Colonel Charles de Gaulle, the most prominent leader of the Free French in World War II, and later, of course, Prime Minister of France for many years, or President of France for many years. Charles de Gaulle, then a colonel, proposed that French armor be reorganized into armored divisions along the lines that the Germans had used in Poland. That was a very effective way of deploying armor. That, too, was resisted and eventually rejected. So Charles de Gaulle also, just like Pierre Coe, was one of the figures who attempted to reorganize the French military along lines that would have permitted it to offer a successful resistance to Adolf Hitler, but that reorganization did not take place. Much of the French military was surrendered to Adolf Hitler. Thousands of planes, thousands of tanks, and a good portion of the very powerful French fleet were never put into battle at all. And that, again, was due to a combination of incompetence and deliberate subversion by some of the Caguilar and Croix de Fer-connected fascists, many of whom, as we saw last week, went on to play prominent roles in the Vichy collaborationist government with which François Mitterrand was so cozy, at least up until the tide of battle began to turn. Again, this, I'm going into this by way not only of understanding François Mitterrand, because his role in the contemporary world, I think, needs to be examined very closely in light of his fascist collaborationist past. Maybe it was just a sincere mistake, but I think we need to very seriously consider the possibility that it may have been more than just a sincere mistake. And the true nature of the French defeat in 1940, that defeat that was reversed by the Normandy invasion, the 50th anniversary of which we've just celebrated, the true nature of that defeat is one of the elements of fascism that has been obscured through historical obfuscation, I suspect deliberate historical obfuscation, because many of the most prominent people in French politics, French finance, and French industry, as well as the French aristocracy, were very, very pro-fascist and participated in the Cagoule coup attempts of 36 through 38 and later were enthusiastic supporters of the Vichy government. One of the things that we looked at last week was the fact that the Cagoule, this powerful French fascist movement, was organized into small groups, groups which were underground and which were being put together in anticipation of an overall military push towards the establishment of a fascist government. The clandestine cellular organization of fascist clandestine cellular nature of fascist organization is one of the most important things to understand historically in coming to understand, as I've titled this series, why Johnny can't identify Il Duce. It's because Il Duce, in this case, in this context, political shorthand for fascism, is organized clandestinely. In Radio Free America number 10, as well as a two-part miscellaneous archive series dealing with the origins of the German Nazi Party, we took a look at the fact that Adolf Hitler's start in German political life, as well as the start of the German Nazi Party itself, were direct outgrowths of German military intelligence, specifically the political department of German military intelligence under General von Lassalle. What we're going to do next, after a musical break, is to take a look at the clandestine cellular organizational nature of fascism. We're going to touch briefly on Joseph Gollum's work from the Armies of Spies, and then we're going to jump to the present. We're going to take a look at a very important article from the August 1994 issue of The Searchlight, the British anti-fascist publication, in which the current organization of the Nazi groups in Germany is revealed to be set up precisely along the clandestine cellular methodological pattern that Adolf Hitler espoused, that the German Nazis used during the going underground period following Stalingrad, and this particular methodology survived very well into the post-World War II period, as we saw in the 1920-92 installment of RFA 37, and it has survived intact to this day. We're going to look at that after a musical break. We're going to continue now with the discussion, and we're going to jump from the past to the present. We've been talking about the role of French fascists, in particular the clandestine fascist organization called the Cagoule, or les Cagoulards, the so-called hooded ones, in subverting the French democracy of Léon Blum, and also playing a role in the subversion of the French armed forces, which were unable to successfully resist the German invasion of 1940. What we're going to take a look at now is one of the major reasons why Johnny can't identify Il Duce, why Johnny or Janie can't identify fascism. It's because fascism historically has deliberately sought to operate in a clandestine and consequently unrecognizable fashion. To kick off this segment of the discussion, we're going to turn ever so briefly to a book that we used last week. This book was authored in 1939 by a journalist who was very prominent in his day and who achieved considerable recognition for his reportage about the rise of fascism in Germany as well as other European nations. That journalist's name was Joseph Gollum, G-O-L-L-O-M-B, and in 1939 he published a book called Armies of Spies. It was published in hardcover by Macmillan and Company. Actually, did they call themselves Macmillan and Company in those days? Let me take a look. That's what they call themselves now. Published in hardcover by the Macmillan Company, yes. And once again, copyright 1939, Joseph Gollum, Armies of Spies, Macmillan, 1939. I'm not going to dwell on this, but last week we spoke about Gollum's discussion of how Hitler himself, bear in mind, an undercover operative for the political department of the German Reichswehr, how Adolf Hitler organized his Nazi party. And in its inception, the Nazi party itself was a front for Reichswehr intelligence along a dual organizational line. There was to be the above-ground party structure itself and a clandestine army, sort of a spy army underground, which would work directly with the visible overground organization. We should also note that this basic methodological organization was used by fascism and Nazism to subvert the neighboring countries that it had targeted for conquest. The organizational methodology used by fascism and Nazism for the subversion of democracy in its native nation was at one with the methodological organization used for the subversion of neighbors targeted for military conquest. Joseph Gollum describes this, and he describes Hitler while recovering from a gas attack during World War I. On his hospital cot, Hitler pondered it all. Excuse me. There was the pattern to follow, he exulted. Recruit an army of spies, an army not only in numbers, but in organization and discipline. At the same time, recruit another army in uniform. This one would have to live at first under some, quote, legal, unquote, guise, so that it would have a chance to grow to striking strength before the government became too alarmed. But until the army in the open had attained full stature, the Secret Service Army must add to its function combatant service. One more time. But until the army in the open had attained full stature, the Secret Service Army must add to its function combatant service. It must sap and mine and undermine. Men drink in words as they drink water, a daily need from press and pulpit and personal hearsay. Then the reservoir from which the enemy drinks must be seen to. The foolish must be fooled, the discontented inflamed. By persuasion and by bribery, by threat, intrigue, blackmail, and lie, much can be done to the minds of a people. Meanwhile, good men must infiltrate every trench of the enemy, win posts high and low, so long as they are important posts. All this time, arms and ammunition must be begged, borrowed, or stolen, and cached in secret places until the proper moment. And every now and then, the two growing armies in concert must try a push at the edifice of the enemy. A push, was Hitler's word for it, to see how ripe the moment may be. So note again the function of the clandestine army in effecting psychological warfare against the population targeted for fascist subversion, whether the population in the native country of the fascist movement or in a neighbor targeted for military conquest. Note also that the two halves of the fascist organization, the above-ground, quote, legal, unquote, organization, and the underground organization, which is waging psychological warfare and also infiltrating the political structure of that is targeted for subversion, how the two work in concert and eventually are reunited. In Radio Free America number 37, How the United States Lost the Second World War, we took a look at how the Third Reich used clandestine organization to survive military defeat in World War II. One of the popular misconceptions is that the Third Reich disappeared. It did not disappear. It went underground, and it did not lose. It won. It won World War II quite literally, not on the battlefield, but in the political arena. That will seem like madness to the uninitiated listener. I can appreciate that. I only can refer the interested listener to Radio Free America 37, done on 13, the original broadcasts, done on 13 successive weeks from July 26th of 1992 through October 18th of 1992, a full fiscal quarter. We should note that one of the truisms of intellectual history is that intellectual principles which are viewed as established and as given eventually are often proved to be completely fallacious. It was taken for granted at one time that the sun revolved around the earth because that's how it appeared. We now know that's not the case. It was also taken for granted at one time that the earth was flat. Now we know that's not the case. Well, this is true with political science and history as well, although pop history and pop political science have it that the Third Reich lost, in fact, in what is frankly one of the most remarkable, albeit an evil achievement, one of the most remarkable achievements of history. The Third Reich went underground and actually triumphed in a limited fashion, limited so far. In Radio Free America 37, in the August 9th, 1992 episode, we took a look at how the Third Reich planned to go underground after its defeat at Stalingrad. In the September 20th, 1992 installment, we took a look at the plans of the Third Reich to survive in tightly organized small cells, which were underground, however, which would be joined together by a clandestine organizational structure. We also took a look at the role of the Auslandorganisation, or AO, in the Nazi plans to go underground. The Third Reich's successful plans to go underground and survive military defeat entailed, to a considerable extent, the dispersal of its organization. Rather than organizing centrally, the organization was dispersed, much of it went abroad, and it went underground. Germany, the Nazi party structure in Germany proper, in the immediate post-World War II period, was underground and cellularly organized. We took a look in the September 20th, 1992 installment about how this cellular organization not only worked, but survived and actually governed Germany, ran Germany through a so-called Führungsring, a system of mafia-like control. The so-called New Germany, the Federal Republic of Germany, what used to be West Germany, in fact was being run by what was quite literally a Nazi government exile in Spain, which exerted its control through this Führungsring, through this mafia-like structure of small underground but very closely connected and effectively connected cells. Now, again, to the newer listener, this will appear to be hocus-pocus. Please get a hold of Radio Free America 37, particularly the August 9th and September 20th installments. We relied for our documentation on a very important book by an anti-fascist writer called Kurt Ries called The Nazis Go Underground, written in 1944. And then we took a look at another prominent anti-fascist work, that of T.H. Tettens, in his book, The Old Nazis and the New Germany, from 1961. We took a look at his discussion of what the British occupation authorities found in Germany in 1953 when they began examining a coup attempt by Werner Naumann, a graduate, former official, I should say, of Goebbels' propaganda ministry, who tried to overthrow the weak and relatively superficial democracy of Konrad Adenauer. In investigating that coup attempt, the British discovered that, in fact, the German society in the so-called New Germany was being run by this Führungsring, this mafia-like structure of underground control through tightly organized, very, very effectively organized, and centrally connected cellular units. Literally, the very cells that Kurt Rees spoke about in 1944 were described as functioning very effectively by T.H. Tetens 17 years later. Bear in mind, too, the description offered by, or presented, I should say, by Joseph Gollum, of the two halves of the Nazi structure as envisioned by Hitler, the overground or legal structure and the underground, and the underground structure, the overground army and the underground army. Because what we're going to look at next is the perpetuation of that same methodology in contemporary Germany. We're going to turn for our discussion to a very important publication, one that I've been using in recent months and one that I strongly recommend listeners subscribe to. That publication is called The Searchlight. It's a British publication. It's an anti-fascist monthly, and it is not to be confused with The Spotlight, an American publication of a dramatically different political stripe. More about The Searchlight right now.
To subscribe to The Searchlight, a British anti-fascist publication, write to Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, or phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax 011-4471-284-4410. That's The Searchlight Magazine Limited, 37B, New Cavendish Street, London, W1M8JR, phone 011-4471-284-4040, or fax at 011-4471-284-4410.
That again, the address, etc., for The Searchlight. In the August 1994 issue of The Searchlight, there's a very important article about the cellular organization of the contemporary Nazi structure in Germany. Now, again, we should note that the conception of the denazification of Germany at the end of World War II was a myth, a political myth as readily disprovable, if one knows where to look, as the contention that the Earth is flat is disprovable. From the August 1994 issue of The Searchlight, we find the following article. It's entitled, Following the Party Bans, the Expansion of the Illegal NSDAP. Now, NSDAP stands for Nationalsozialistische Deutsche Arbeiterpartei. That's German National Socialist Workers Party. That is the Nazi Party title under Adolf Hitler. The main title of the article is, March Separately, Strike Together. Very much like what Joseph Gollum described in Armies of Spies. Again, he wrote, but until the army in the open had attained full stature, the Secret Service army must add to its function combatant service. Skipping down, all this time, arms and ammunition must be begged, borrowed, or stolen and cached in secret places until a proper moment. And every now and then, the two growing armies in concert must try a push at the edifice of the enemy. So note, the two armies, the above-ground army and the underground army, as described by Joseph Gollum in 1939, and now in 1994, we find from The Searchlight of August of 94, March Separately, Strike Together, because they are employing, the German Nazi parties are employing exactly the same structure that Adolf Hitler conceived of and put into effect in the 1920s. Now, as I read the sections of the article that I'm going to read, note several things. First of all, note something that we have described before and documented before, namely the profound support given to these so-called neo-Nazis, and note the use of the term so-called, by the German intelligence services and law enforcement authorities. We've dealt with this at considerable length in the past. Note that during the course of the discussion to follow, note in particular the role of the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic intelligence service in Germany. Note also that when German Nazi parties are officially banned, they do not actually disappear. They ostensibly break up, but in fact, they go underground and merge with the underground NSDAP. The actual effect of this is to have a number of different organizations, seemingly separate, but in fact, very, very closely connected. They are actually part of the same organization. Each of these relatively small and seemingly disconnected Nazi parties are in fact branches or tentacles of the same organization. But the bulk of the organization which connects these overground Nazi parties, seemingly disconnected, are in fact, that organization is underground and it is a centrally controlled organization. One of the descriptions offered in the text that I'm about to read is that of pieces of a broken wheel. The various Nazi parties would appear to be sections of the rim of a broken wheel. But in fact, the wheel is intact. It's just that the connections between these seemingly disparate pieces of a seemingly broken wheel are underground. Precisely the binary function that was conceived of by Adolf Hitler and described by Joseph Gollum in 1939. Reading from the Searchlight of August of 1994, again, march separately, strike together, the expansion of the illegal NSDAP. Though public debate over the banning of extreme right-wing parties began anew after the Lübeck synagogue arson attack at the end of March, Germany's Nazi cadres have long since returned to a tried and trusted tactic, the organization of secret underground cells and a tightly run organizational network which appears publicly under various names. Documents newly obtained from the Nazis show that this development was initiated secretly and is being guided by a long-established organizational nucleus. The Internal Security Service, the Bundesamt für Verfassungsschutz, has denied the existence of a clandestine Nazi network for 20 years, but, as evidence shows, was actually extensively involved in its formation. One more time. The Internal Security Service, the Bundesamt für Verfassungsschutz, has denied the existence of the clandestine Nazi network for 20 years, but, as evidence shows, was actually extensively involved in its formation. The green light for the integration of a new generation of Nazi cadres was given by the successor organization to the banned Nationalistische Front, or NF, the Direkte Aktion Mitteldeutschland, which recently disbanded itself to continue its activities through a cell network. That sentence again. The green light for the integration of a new generation of Nazi cadres was given by the successor organization to the banned Nationalistische Front, or NF, the Direkte Aktion Mitteldeutschland, which recently disbanded itself to continue its activities through a cell network. This strategy, adopted by the most powerful National Socialist group in Eastern Germany, is not that new. Since the beginning of the 1970s, an underground National Socialista Deutscher Arbeiterpartei, or National Socialist German Workers Party, NSDAP, has pulled the strings of the openly active extreme right groups. One more time, because these are the thesis statements of this article. Since the beginning of the 1970s, now this is actually somewhat inaccurate. This actually goes back far before the 1970s, as we will see next week. Since the beginning of the 1970s, an underground National Socialista Deutscher Arbeiterpartei, or National Socialist German Workers Party, NSDAP, has pulled the strings of the openly active extreme right groups. The readiness of its right-wing extremist offspring to cooperate has been in no small measure assisted by the ban on Nazi groups. The most notable evidence is the formation of the terrorist Anti-Antifa, or Anti-Anti-Fascist campaign, to which all organizations belong and in which they work closely together. The switch from open organizational forms to clandestine operation is part and parcel of the organizational history of the Nazis of the Federal Republic. Whenever one of their organizations was banned, the background network of the illegal NSDAP was strengthened. Members classified as reliable were immediately offered an alternative structure. Interplay with the security services has also been long established, above all with the Verfassungsschutz, which gave the all-clear whenever a formally banned organization was no longer being scrutinized. At the same time, at least in the 1970s, countless agents of the Verfassungsschutz were heavily involved in the launch of the underground NSDAP and were thus very well informed about the extreme right-wing network. One agent, infiltrated in the early 1970s, estimated that his colleagues, that's his colleagues in the Verfassungsschutz, a domestic German intelligence service, one agent infiltrated in the early 1970s estimated that his colleagues accounted for around 10% of the whole organization. Changeover from open organization to clandestine operation was accordingly rewarded by the state authorities with a relaxation of surveillance. That is why this network is able to report its most dramatic growth for 20 years. In its circular, In Aktion, February of 1994, Direkte Aktion Mitteldeutschland Junge Front, which claims more than 600 members in eastern Germany, says, quote, "We have, with effect from January 20, 1994, discontinued several association names, symbols, and inter-kameradschaft structures. Support groups will be allowed complete autonomy. Any appearances under such titles as FMJ, JF are to be discontinued. A continually changing title," unquote, "is to be used from now on, and the, quote, title KS or kameradschaft is in any case to be avoided," unquote. Skipping down, what is presented as if it were their own invention can, on closer inspection, be seen as an almost word-for-word repetition of the NSDAP concept of 1975. Quote, "For the purposes of public activities, suitable political associations are to be formed which correspond to our party task," unquote. Interrupting, compare this with Joseph Gollum's description, already presented. Continuing, "Seen from outside, such organizations were to look like a broken circle. Quote, a local group can be formed from 12 national socialists who are in a position to attend yearly party conferences. In the main, local groups will work autonomously under control of a trusted person who maintains the contacts with each other," unquote. "In this way, it can be assured that individual members, should they be arrested, are not in a position to name others." Skipping down, and still quoting, "In any group, readiness for action will be achieved if, first and foremost, it has available the following: ideologists, strategists, orators, administrators, technicians, fundraisers, in addition to some so-called followers. If there should be a surplus of any of the above specialisms in a group, this can be used in forming the leadership of additional cells," unquote. This cold calculation and classification of human resources has its roots in the organizational concept of the death squads of the Third Reich, the Waffen-SS. I would also note the similarity with the description that Joseph Gollum presented all the way back in 1939. "Men drink in words as they drink water. A daily need from press and pulpit and personal hearsay. Then the reservoir from which the enemy drinks must be seen to. The foolish must be fooled, the discontented inflamed. By persuasion and by bribery, by threat, intrigue, blackmail, and lie, much can be done to the minds of a people. Meanwhile, good men must infiltrate every trench of the enemy, win posts high and low, so long as they are important posts. All this time, arms and ammunition must be begged, borrowed, or stolen, and cached in secret places until the proper moment." We will see Joseph Gollum's words echoed throughout more than 50 years later. Continuing with the Searchlight from August of 1994. "The cadre of various Nazi organizations have followed this dictum and have reorganized and cleansed their structures of unreliable members. Parties which expect to be banned soon, such as the Freiheitliche Deutsche Arbeiterpartei, or FAP, are orientating their members towards the formation of cells. Structures which were at one time only admitted to behind closed doors are referred to in internal circulars classified as, quote, official use only, must not fall into enemy hands, unquote. Under the heading, a movement under arms, unquote, members of the FAP leadership wrote an essay about the duties of the so-called Werwolf-Terrorgruppen, quote, for the purposes of agitation and propaganda, outwardly legal parties and associations will be used, but they will be organized and coordinated by a covert cadre organization in which the leadership principle will be realized. Participation in the activities of this covert cadre organization has up to now been confined to a relatively small and easily supervised group that can be directed. For ordinary members of the open organizations, the way to this level was barred unless they were approached and asked to join. Circumstances now seem ripe for an organizational campaign to extend the secret Nazi structures. This has become apparent in the columns of the Nazi structures theoretical journal Nation und Europa. Last week, we took a look at an article also from the Searchlight about the death of Swedish fascist Per Engdahl. We also took a look at descriptions both from the Searchlight and from the book Fascism Today, published all the way back in 1969, at the Malmo International. That was an organization of fascist groups that was put together by Per Engdahl, a Swedish fascist, in 1951 in Malmo, the city of Malmo in southern Sweden. The formation of the so-called Malmo International, again, a consortium of international fascist groups, one of the things that was formed was a fascist paper that it was begun under a different title, but eventually was named Nation und Europa. This Nazi structures theoretical journal, as the Searchlight calls it, Nation und Europa, is an element of historical continuity from the fascism of the Third Reich period, fascists such as Per Engdahl and others who were contemporaries of Hitler, right up to the present time. Again, this newspaper was formed by the Malmo International of Per Engdahl, as we saw last week, again, with an article from the Searchlight. This is the newspaper that is being described here. We should understand, as we continue with our discussion, that there is absolute historical continuity, actual structural operational continuity, as incredible as this will seem to some, between the fascism of the Hitler and Mussolini period and the fascism of today. Obviously, many of the people that were holding forth under Hitler and Mussolini have passed away, but the organizations themselves have maintained the functional continuity, and that is why they are reemerging triumphant, frankly, today. Skipping down in this article, we're going to examine more about the binary structure of German Nazi organization, both the underground organizations and the overground or visible organizations, and bear in mind the cellular organization that the German Nazi parties are advocating and engaging in today, precisely like the cellular organization that we saw in Radio Free America 37, borrowing on the text, or using the text, I should say, of first Kurt Reese in 1944, and then T.H. Tettens from 1961 examining the Nazi cells which were successfully formed and which functioned underground running the so-called New Germany. Note also the functioning of the NSDAP, the National Socialist Deutsche Arbeiterpartei Auslandorganisation, which also plays a prominent role in the contemporary Nazi structure. Bear in mind that in the 9/20/94 installment, or 9/20/92 installment, of Radio Free America 37, we took a look at Kurt Reese's discussion from all the way back in 1944, 50 years ago, about the German Nazi Party's plans to use the Auslandorganisation as a major element for its dispersal and underground perpetuation. Returning to the Searchlight of August of 1994. Following the collapse of the National Demokratische Partei Deutschlands, which fell at the 5% hurdle in the Bundestag elections, the restructuring of the Nazi scene began at the end of the 1960s. One part organized itself into think tanks, laying the foundations of the later so-called New Right, unquote. The other part took care of the formation of predominantly violent cadres into a covertly active behind-the-scenes organization. In the early years, this called itself the NSDAP, the original title of Hitler's party, which is now only used by some parts of the organization, and then only for propaganda purposes. The new NSDAP was launched in 1973. By the time of its second founding conference on September 6th and 7th, 1975 in Wiesbaden, it already had control of more than 16 regional sub-organizations, a newspaper for the USA and Great Britain, and the NS-Kampfgruppe for Germany. Publication of NSDAP material continued up to today in the USA, while leadership of the cells and groups is based in Germany and Austria, as Gary Lauck, L-A-U-C-K, the head of the overseas organization of the NSDAP, the NSDAPAO, recently confirmed in an interview with Spiegel TV. In the same interview, he emphasized that his NSDAPAO was only, quote, an externally overestimated, unquote, part of the total structure. In the early years, the NSDAP was formed from militants of the Nazi Wehrsportgruppen, clubs which provided uniformed weapons training for Nazi paramilitaries and selected activists of other extreme right and fascist organizations. The largest of its paramilitary groups, with over 400 members, was the Wehrsportgruppe Hoffmann, banned in 1980. It was centrally involved in the murder of the Jewish publisher Shlomo Levin and his wife, and in the bombing of the Munich Oktoberfest in 1980, which claimed the lives of 13 people. We took a look at the Sportgruppe Hoffmann. We have seen the Sportgruppe Hoffmann in numerous archive shows. We took a look at it in the aforementioned broadcast, The Seeds of Nuremberg, or the aforementioned series, The Seeds of Nuremberg, specifically in the June 26th Seeds of... the June 12th, 1994 installment of The Seeds of Nuremberg. We've also taken a look at the Sportgruppe Hoffmann in Radio Free America program number 19. And we took a look at it, at elements of it again in Radio Free America shows 32 and supplements to 35. One of the graduates of the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, Odfried Hepp, a member of Abu Abbas's organization, of course, aided by Manzer al-Kassar, one of Oliver North's many unsavory associates in the Iran-Contra scandal. Also, we would note we have seen in Radio Free, not in Radio Free America number 22, but in the June 12, 1994 installment of The Seeds of Nuremberg, we've taken a look at the role of Hans Langemann, formerly of the BND and the security chief for the ill-fated 1972 Munich Olympics. We took a look at Hans Langemann's role as a member of the already the previously discussed Verfassungsschutz in helping to provide an alibi for Karl-Heinz Hoffmann, leader of the Wehrsportgruppe Hoffmann, with regard to the Munich Oktoberfest bombing of 1980. Continuing with the Searchlight from August of 1994. As well as the organizations, a large number of people are part of the membership of the network as individuals. Theirs is the duty of influencing the character of their own organization's policies with that of the underground party. As early as 1977, the organization encompassed important members of the European Workers' Party, or EAP, the Deutsche Volksunion, the NPD, and its offspring, the Junge Nationaldemokraten, the Vikingjugend, and last but not least, former Waffen-SS members. The DVU of Gerhard Frey, of course, we have looked at in the past. Gerhard Frey, an individual whose unsavory Nazi career stems from the immediate post-World War II period through the assassination of President Kennedy, as we looked at in RFA 37, right on up to the contemporary period where he was a funding conduit for BND monies that were channeled to Vladimir Zhirinovsky, the Russian fascist. Continuing. In this way, the impetus for the establishment of the underground NSDAP took effect. After the war, countless groups, associations, and parties were formed. While many of these parties foundered or were banned, the linking organizations which functioned in the background remained unscathed. One of the latter was the now very active Deutsche Kulturwerk Europäischen Geistes, or German Cultural Foundation for European Spirit, the DKEG. The DKEG is a good example of one of the elements of historical and operational continuity from the fascism of the Hitler-Mussolini period right on up to the present. Continuing with the Searchlight. The DKEG was founded in 1953 with 100,000 Deutschmarks, or £40,000 grant, from the German Association of Industrial Foundations. It sometimes appears under the name Deutsche Kulturgemeinschaft Freundeskreis Ulrich von Hutten or Gesellschaft für freie Publistik. Its influence makes it a key organization in the secret Nazi structures, encompassing every section of the right-wing extremist and fascist scene, and closely tied to ex-Waffen-SS organizations like the Kameradenwerk Corps Steiner. Note here that this DKEG was founded with a grant from the German Association of Industrial Foundations, in other words, financed by prominent German industrialists, just like the German Nazi Party under Hitler, and that it maintains, again, historical continuity from the fascism of the Hitler period to the fascism of the present. And note again the role of Waffen-SS members and ex-Waffen-SS organizations in the building of these seemingly disparate but in fact completely unified Nazi structures. Continuing with the Searchlight of August 1994. I almost said August of 1944. Freudian slip and not nearly as far off as one might hope. Continuing. The DKEG network of NSDAP cadres still makes headlines in the 1990s. In November of 1991, it initiated a uniformed Nazi paramilitary demonstration at the Brandenburg Military Cemetery at Halbe, quote, to honor the Waffen-SS, unquote. It is noteworthy that all sections of the supposedly deeply divided Nazi scene sent cadres in answer to the order of the DKEG. See Searchlight, March of 1992. We can thank the Agile for Forfassungsschutz agent Werner Gottwald, G-O-T-T-W-A-L-D, for the certain knowledge that, for the most part, Nazi groups are centrally directed by a single organizational network. Using the cover name of Reiser, R-E-I-S-E-R, he reported to his office on the building of a right-wing underground organization. Gottwald was not just any ordinary member. He was the illegal NSDAP's auditor and sat on its executive. Together with Wilhelm Wibbles, W-U-Umlaut-B-B-E-L-S, a former member of the Waffen-SS Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler, he was directly involved in the building of the organization and was thus well-informed at almost every stage. Note that the auditor of the illegal NSDAP, an agent of the Verfassungsschutz, working together with a graduate of one of the elite Waffen-SS units, the Liebstandarte Adolf Hitler, which grew directly, that was a combat unit that grew directly out of Hitler's personal guard, his personal security outfit. Continuing, he, that is to say, Werner Gottwald, he was able to report in detail on the regional buildup until 1977, the founding of Michael Kunin's Aktionsfront Nationaler Socialisten from 1977 on money, transactions, and weaponry, and on Wehrsport and attacks. That last sentence again. He was able to report in detail on the regional buildup until 1977, the founding of Michael Kunin's Aktionsfront Nationaler Socialisten from 1977 on, that's National Socialism from 1977, on money transactions and weaponry, and on Wehrsport and attacks. Gottwald routinely informed his superiors about the annual gatherings of the NSDAP leadership. For example, in April of 1976 on the island of Helgoland and June 1977 in Trebol Niederaschen, attended by 120 leadership cadres. The names of important Nazi cadres of the present day appear on the attendance lists for those meetings. Friedhelm Busse, B-U-S-S-E, Federal Chairman of the FAP, Auschwitz liar Thies Christoffersen, for whom a warrant exists in Germany, the terrorist Manfred Raeder, who is currently attempting to set up a German free state in former East Prussia, Arnulf Priem, P-R-I-E-M, of Berlin, who is in the highest echelons of the Gesinnschaft Gemeinschaft Neue Front, or GDNF, and its chairman Christian Vork, V-O-R-C-H, from Hamburg, are just a few of them. The public did not hear about this from the Verfassungsschutz at the time, but first learned about it in 1982 from the journal Konkret, to whom Gottwald's reports were leaked.